God, I hate Adrian Beltre. I don't actually hate Adrian Beltre. I love him. Please cut that.
Howdy, y'all, and welcome to the Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast, episode 23. I'm your host, Ian Hudson, and I'm an editor here at the Dynasty Guru. With me is Keaton DeRauscher and Patrick Magnus. Keats, how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing swell, man. Coming live from sunny Virginia. Doing great. Happy to be here.
Patrick, how are you doing today?
I am doing really tired, but good. And Xin Nian Kuai Le, it's Chinese New Year. So happy Chinese New Year to the 0.000% of our audience that is celebrating Chinese New Year.
Happy Chinese New Year. That's fantastic. What a great sentiment to start off the show.
Also, happy Valentine's Day, you wonderful, beautiful people.
And happy Valentine's Day. For today's show, we're going to be discussing all the transactions that have occurred and free agent signings that have occurred since we last recorded. And we're also going to be tackling second and third base rankings that have come out recently on the Dynasty Guru. We're going to be focusing on guys Keaton and Patrick think are too high or too low. The biggest free agent signing since we've last recorded is...
All one of them.
Our boy Yu Darvish to the Cubs. 6 years, $126 million. This is his fifth year stateside. He's 31. I always remember him as chasing his 2013 season. That was the year that he had career highs in innings at over 200, strikeout per nine at 11.89, and WAR at 4.5, and career lows in ERA and xFIP at 2.83 and 2.84, respectively. Since then, he's either been hurt or not as good. I mean, even his 2017 was 186 innings, but a 3.65 xFIP and a strikeout per nine of only 10.8, which admittedly is still double digits, but lower than his highs. I still want to believe in that peak Darvish, but I'm feeling more and more like I may be in the minority there. But let's talk about his value on the north side. Patrick, how do you think his addition to the Cubs rotation affects his fantasy value?
I mean, if you play in a league with wins, obviously this is a great move for Darvish, and for you if you happen to have him on your team. So it certainly boosts up his wins. I don't know that it makes a significant difference. Similar to you, I always view Darvish, but I view him in his 2012 season because I didn't realize that he had really managed to cut his walks down significantly. I still don't. I need to give him more credit. I was a little bit down on him, but looking at the numbers, I mean, he's definitely a number one. I kind of pictured him as borderline number one, but that K rate, he's gonna stack up plenty of wins. I'm all for it. I'm curious to get Keaton's take here. I can't wait to hear him tell me about how the Brewers are gonna beat the Cubs this year. So excited for that.
Yeah, I'm not going to take the Brewers. I know that since the last podcast, once Darvish immediately signed with the Cubs, both of you guys have been like, so you're doubling down on the Brewers, right? Not exactly feeling that. I think it's a pretty great fit, actually. I like Darvish being with the Cubs for kind of the same reason you said. If he play in a league with wins, he's going to boost it there. He's honed in on the walks. He's going to be the, you know, he's not going to be probably the opening day starter because Lester would be there. But as far as like the stats and all that, it's going to be performance ace of that staff. That 1-2 punch of Lester and Darvish is going to be pretty solid at the top of that rotation.
Yeah, what do you guys think of the contract about locking him up for 6 years, and also the fact that Jake Arrieta turned down 6 years is bananas. Although you know, who knew that the free agent market was going to be the way it is?
Well, actually, I have a comp for this that I think is worth talking about in terms of, because I actually thought it seemed kind of low. But I'm wondering how you guys compare Yu Darvish to David Price, because David Price just very recently at the age of 30 signed a 7-year, $110 million contract. So that's $30 million a year. And Darvish just signed a 5-year, $125 million deal. So it seemed, I would take Darvish over Price. So it seemed low to me, but obviously it was different years, different markets. So that's certainly something to consider. But it seems low to me. And I'm just kind of curious how you would compare those two players and how their contracts compare as well.
So being a Red Sox fan, I actually immediately thought of the Price contract as well when I saw the Darvish signing. And at the time of the Price signing, you know, I was all for it, particularly with the player option in the third year, meaning that, you know, they had locked up an ace caliber pitcher and then given him an opt-out option, meaning that the way that the market was back then, you know, like think of Zach Greinke, right? He was able to opt out and cash in. And I was kind of expecting Price to do that as well. But now Price has been garbage, not complete garbage, but he certainly hasn't been good. The Red Sox are paying him a lot of money and he might end up being, you know, a long reliever for them, or at least that's what he was last year. We just did a triple play article on Boston. And if you're interested in more about Price, definitely check that out, because Adam Lawler breaks Price down very well. But I think if we were having this conversation, you know, a couple of years ago, we maybe are liking this contract more. But 6 years, and there's no player opt out, and even if there was, the market is in such a way that he probably wouldn't.
Well, your thoughts on it are better than my thoughts on it, which are zero thoughts on it. So, all right. No other big signings to talk about, but pitchers and catchers have reported, so baseball season is officially underway. And we've got our first big injury. Irvin Santana has had finger surgery, and he's going to be out for a few months. I don't know. Irvin Santana is... through some sort of devil magic, he was good last year, and now he's out. So take from that what you will. Anyone have any thoughts on Irvin Santana? No?
Yeah, I actually think that the injury might present a buying opportunity because, I mean, like you said, he was somehow magically good last year. I remember watching and seeing with my eyeballs that his stuff did look good, but then looking at the metrics and being like, he should be terrible. So if his injury has made him dirt cheap in your league, I actually might try to snag him for like pennies just because there is some upside.
His injury seems to be of a garden variety. Everything I'm seeing seems that it's just wear and tear. I'm not sure how much wear and tear you get prior to pitchers and catchers reporting, but be that as it may, he's out for a while. I think it might nominally bump up the value of Jose Berrios and Kyle Gibson, Adalberto Mejia, if you were looking at those guys, but not in any significant way. You guys agree, disagree on that? Any thoughts?
No thoughts.
That is the correct answer.
The only thought I have is, do you guys realize that Phil Hughes is still playing baseball and is still in the Twins organization?
Is he still walking like four players a year?
Probably. Yeah, I saw that too. All right, Phil Hughes, get out there. Get it. You keep living that dream, buddy. Lastly, in the news and notes, I'm seeing this here. Yonder Alonso's in Cleveland. I don't think that's right. I think I saw him in Seattle. So I'm not sure where we're getting this information from. But apparently he's in Cleveland now. So all the analysis that we did on him in Seattle is null and void. Do we have any thoughts about Yonder Alonso in Seattle?
Did it again.
Did it again. Do we have any thoughts about Yonder Alonso in Cleveland?
Yeah. Well, we made the mistake of thinking that he was still in Seattle, which, I mean, the dude's on his fourth team in 3 years, so what do you expect? At least his teammates made the same mistake. And there's an awesome video on Cut 4 that was posted of Yonder Alonso going up to all of his teammates at the Tribe Fan Fest and asking for autographs, and all of them not having any idea they were signing autographs for a teammate, which is a pretty hilarious video. So shouts to Cut 4, and oops, we'll do better.
I don't know. I feel like it's so perfect that we messed up his team, and then he goes to this fan fest in disguise and nobody recognizes him. It's amazing. We didn't recognize him either. No big deal. And I would say
it proves our point, really.
Yeah, I think we've really nailed down Yonder Alonso and his value on the Seattle, Cleveland, Mariner Indians.
My favorite team, the Mariner Indians. Well, with the recent transactions out of the way, we can move on to some tie-in content with the Dynasty Guru. A while back, we put out our second and third base rankings. We've also put out shortstop and outfield since we've last recorded, but we don't want to record for 5 hours, so we're just going to jump on second and third base here, talking about guys that Keaton and Patrick think are too high or too low. So starting off with second base rankings, Keaton, tell me why Yoan Moncada, currently ranked at number 5, is too low.
I mean, Moncada is your stereotypical Studley McStudleyton. And, I mean, he's going to be a contributor in pretty much every category. He's 22. He's in the majors now. He's got power. He's got speed. He's got the potential to hit for high average. He's good in average leagues. He's good in OBP leagues. He has legit ability to be like a top 5, stretch ability to be top 3 player overall. Easy top 10. And I mean, we have him at 5th at his position. He's easy top 3 at the position for me. He's ahead of Scope. He's ahead of Dozier. I could see borderline with Jose Ramirez. I could see you putting Ramirez ahead of him just because Ramirez has at least had 2 very attractive years at the major league level so far. Moncada's just breaking in now. But just in terms of pure potential, he for dynasty value, he's easy top 3 to position at second base. And I would absolutely take him over both Scope and Dozier, who we have at 3 and 4 ahead of him.
Patrick, I think you also wanted to talk about Scope being too high. Let's tie it into this Moncada talk. What do you think? How far down should Scope go? I assume that you'd want to drop him past Moncada at 5, but how much farther would you want him to go?
Well, I as Keaton knows, because we play in various leagues together, and we actually made a trade that involved Scope last year. Yeah, I love the man. He's young and playing in a great ballpark and has power. I just am a little concerned with how that success came about. He did lower his strikeout rate, but did not really improve his walk rate. And so a lot of it is contact driven, and that's not something he's been known to do in the past. So is that sustainable? Has he made any adjustments? Not entirely sure. I agree with Keaton that Moncada should be above him. I would probably move Scope down to 5th and have Moncada up right where Keaton says we should have him. I think him and Dozier are probably interchangeable in the sense of where we have them on the list, just because Dozier had such extreme success and Moncada is all about potential. But like Keaton was saying, Moncada has top 5 player upside. Scope does not.
All right. Keaton, Patrick briefly touched on Brian Dozier. You think he's too high at number 3. Do you think he'd go down significantly lower than 4 or 5? Or do you think that's about the right range for him?
I would move him below Scope I'd move him below Moncada. I'd move him below Alves. I would have him there in that 7-8 tier that we have Daniel Murphy and D. Gordon at. I think that's probably where he belongs in that group with those guys. Dozier brings a lot of power to the table, so he's great for homers, RBIs, OBP. He's also up there in age, so he's 32, I believe. And when assessing dynasty value, that does come into play. So while he is performing at a high level and hits a bunch of homers, the age is relevant. And Scope's 25, Moncada's 22, Albies is 20, right? And all of them still carry major upside. So I think I'd have him in, you know, where we have our 7-8-9 range with Daniel Murphy, D. Gordon, Robinson Cano.
Yeah, man, Brian Dozier, 31, it looks like. He's much older than I would have expected. Yeah, that sounds about right, though. I think that's fair. A fair balance of age and potential versus current level production.
Keaton, would you have Scope above Murphy and Gordon or below them?
Yeah, I'd still have Scope ahead of them for my value. I think he's been trending up every season, the past three seasons. So I did the comments for the top 10 second baseman, and actually one of his haiku was one of my favorite haikus that I've written. But yeah, for the production, he's 25 years old, and each year over year, he's still been getting better. And we know he's going to, well, it's not an exciting Orioles lineup. He's plopped right in the middle of it. So he's got some protection. There are at least some decent bats that'll drive him in when he gets on base, and there'll be ducks on the pond when he comes up. So it's not, there's worse lineups. So I think for where he's at and what he brings to the table, I like his profile, and I would take him ahead of Murphy, Gordon, Cano, and Dozier.
Just one last thing. I know we should probably move on from Scope, but I was just looking at his profile and noticed that another reason for his success last year is probably the fact that he shaved about 4% off his ground ball rate and increased his fly ball rate by about 3%. Which led to that uptick in homers. Obviously, we all knew he had power, but everything kind of came together last year. Yeah, he's intriguing, and you know, I do love him. I would probably have him ranked right about where you think. I just want to make sure that we're not saying he's bad. He's really good. Let's just make that clear.
Yes, I agree with that.
All right. Sufficient disclaimers that Scope is good. Let's move on to the next tier here, 11 through 20, going numerically. Patrick, you think Ian Happ is a little too low at number 11. Tell me why, and tell me where you think he should be.
I know that people are a little worried about the playing time aspect for Happ, but as Keaton so famously says about Barnes and most players he likes, is, you know, good players find playing time. I think if they end up using him as a super utility man, that's good too. He's still going to get the plate appearances. I would bet he's still going to get over 500. And I like his plate approach a lot. He K'd too often last year, but in the minors, his K rate was never above 23. Well, slightly above 23, never above 24. So I think there's a tremendous upside with Happ, particularly looking at his Statcast stuff too. Above average launch angle, above average generated velocity, above average exit velocity. Yeah. I would be all over him in any league I could get him.
All right. We've got him at 11 on the Dynasty Guru list. Where would you have him?
I am bumping him probably above D. Gordon. I'm going to put him right below Daniel Murphy at 7. So I would give him, I'd put him on 8 on our list. Do you have any thoughts, Keaton?
The 30% K rate was my thought. That's extremely high. That tempers my expectations. a bit. As you so wonderfully alluded to, my philosophy is productive bats will find playing time. And the way that Joe Maddon uses people on the Cubs, he'll play somewhere, whether that's outfield, second base, or freaking Rizzo has eligibility at second base now in fantasy leagues. He'll find some place to play if he's hitting. The 30% K rate is very high, and it's also a lot higher than his K rate in the minors. So I know, I mean, minors is not obviously elite pitching because it would then be in the majors, but that's track record for success. You can use it as a benchmark. He kept the walk rate about the same, which is good to see. So approach wasn't radically different. He clearly started taking some hacks when he got to the major league level, but I mean, let's be realistic, who doesn't? So that's the only thing that kind of concerns me with him there.
I don't mean to call you out, but you know, Moncada's K rate is in the 30s too, and that's been consistent. He's been whiffing like that in the minors as well. So can you just sort of rationalize why you are okay with Moncada's K rate but have an issue with Haps?
Overall package brings to the table is much more attractive in Moncada. He's going to steal way more bases than Hap will. I think he has the ability to hit for a much higher average than Hap will as well. And you kind of know that what you're getting yourself into with the strikeouts. Is there more risk in Moncada? Probably, because he does have the ability to strike out 35 times, and the average could completely bottom out. But the much higher potential of Moncada and what he's bringing to the table with steals, I mean, you kind of know what you're getting with that. The 30% K rate was a much higher out of character than what we've seen from Hap. So that's why that stuck out to me as, was that him adjusting to the major leagues, or did he get to the major leagues and the much more seasoned pitchers catch a flaw in his batting that they just immediately took advantage of and he never adjusted back to it, which may have been what happened. And now coming into a full season, he'll have to adjust. But so clearly you believe that he can make that adjustment if that's the case. So that's just kind of my question mark back there. I believe in the everything outside of the strikeouts from Moncada that he's bringing to the table, that I'm less concerned with. You kind of know everything else that he's going to be able to produce is going to temper the strikeouts that he's going to have, and it's not going to weigh him down as much as strikeouts might weigh Hap down. That's just my feelings on that.
Well, I don't like your feelings, but I understand your analysis. I get it, but I guess I'm quite high on Hap, because I'm just looking at his batted ball profile too, and I think I've talked myself into loving him even more than I thought I did. I'm real happy about it.
It's just so bad. The puns are so bad. Next on the list, numerically speaking, number 15, Chris Taylor. Keaton, you think he's too low? Sell Patrick on why he should be higher or even be kept at number 15.
Yeah, I think he should be certainly higher than 15. My mark at a minimum for there is at least ahead of Whit Merrifield, who's at 13. I could maybe push on Keston Hira there. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. We'll give it a go. I know there's a ton of people who are super high on him, and he just hits the bejesus out of the ball. But anyway, at least ahead of Merrifield, and here's why. Chris Taylor and Whit Merrifield, a lot of people, they basically broke out in similar fashion last year. And a lot of people were on kind of both of their bandwagons. Chris Taylor actually had better stats than Whit Merrifield in every single category, with the exception of steals. Chris Taylor, though, it is not for his lacking of stolen bases. He did steal 17. Whit Merrifield, I actually don't have his numbers ahead of me. Off the top of my head, it was somewhere in the 30s, I think. So I think he had like twice as many steals. But Chris Taylor is still running, and he's running well and getting a high volume of steals in the current landscape. So he's not going – it's not like it's a completely empty category for him. 21 homers, 85 RBIs, 17 steals, 8.8 walk rate. He's getting on base, a .288 average, .354 OBP. All of those better than Whit Merrifield, with the exception of steals. So, and he is also 2 years younger. Is the current climate of speed that kind of necessary that that gap of steals between the two makes up for the rest? Gap of steals and age? To me, Chris Taylor absolutely has to be higher than Whit Merrifield on this list.
I'll admit to you, prior to this discussion, I really hadn't given much thought to Whit Merrifield or Chris Taylor. I had kind of just ignored both those players as, you know, they're just kind of blind spots and didn't have strong feelings one way or the other. But I actually am on board now. I think I was sort of in the camp of BABIP regression for Chris Taylor, but I did not realize that his plate skills were so much better than Merrifield's. I honestly thought that they were closer. I'm on board with your Chris Taylor love, and I think your place on the list is appropriate. So I am convinced. Nice
job. Yeah, Chris Taylor's walk rate was twice as high as Merrifield's. So his on-base percentage, I believe, was like 25 points higher. His production was just better. I can't understand how we had Merrifield two spots higher than Chris Taylor on this list.
Yeah, and I mean, this isn't, you were talking about you were talking about the steals difference, and that's one thing that for me is such an annoyance within the fantasy community right now, is all of this talk of steals and like their scarcity. If you're playing in a dynasty league, you want long-term skills. Speed is the first thing that drops off. If you're competing, then yeah, you need your speed, like steal guys. But like, I don't think the lack of steals really necessitates all this bumping that we're doing of speed guys. I would much rather have a player that is balanced than any of that.
I don't care about steals. Okay, great.
Well, I mean, I agree with him, and I kind of understand what he's saying, because all of the other factors kind of contribute to other categories. Like, you think of walks, but it also contributes to OBP. Homers also contributes to RBIs and OBPs and average. So there's kind of that trickle effect into someone who's more balanced, where steals is one category. Steals don't help your OBP. They could help your runs scored indirectly, but I can understand where if you miss Billy Hamilton or D. Gordon, do you care that much to reach on a guy who gets a lot of steals? At that point, everybody else is essentially 10 to 20 or none, right?
Well, yes and no. But I mean, right now we're talking about Chris Taylor versus Whit Merrifield. So while you're not going to get the category winners in Billy Hamilton or even a Jose Altuve, when it gets down to these types of guys, speed production could be the difference between deciding on Chris Taylor versus Whit Merrifield.
Well, I just told you why speed should not be the difference between the two. Every other category goes to Chris Taylor.
Okay, but if you're constructing your roster such that you still need to find steals,
I see your point there. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because steals are so scarce, you know. So, I think a great way to put this is, if you have steals under control in other aspects of your roster, then it's easier to look at all the other factors and then go with Chris Taylor. But I think it's at the risk of upsetting Patrick. I think Steels, they are at a premium, and a few here and there can make a difference.
So while I understand that point in the scenario that you laid out, I do not think that applies to the rankings, and Chris Taylor should be higher than Whit Merrifield.
In full agreement with Keaton here, that's all I got to say.
All right. While we may disagree on the proper place that Stolen Bases has in our valuation of players, I think we can agree that Chris Taylor should be in front of Whit Merrifield. Let's move on to tier 21 through 50. Just a couple of guys that Patrick and Keaton, you guys think are improperly ranked here. Keaton, I think you have some thoughts on Joe Panik at number 35.
I do. I think for the value that he actually has on a fantasy team, as a 35th ranked second baseman, is a really high quality. So it's not so much a higher or a lower as just commenting on the quality that he brings to the table. So he is just incredibly bland as a second baseman. But, and this is actually what ended up happening in TDGX too. And I realized that I didn't have a second baseman pretty deep-ish into the teens. And I just went to the second baseman, was just kind of messing around. I saw him in the middle of the ranks, and I was like, you know what? I should probably scoop that up. Which we'll get into later. TGX2 is an OBP league, and he has a career 345 OBP. He'll probably be able to get you double-digit homers. Won't, you know, blow your mind with runs or RBIs, but he'll contribute. Couple steals, high walk rate, low K rate. He'll literally just marginally contribute in every category. He won't sink you in any, and he won't blow you away in any. So he's really just for the value of the 35th in the rank. He's actually just for that low in the rankings. He has a high value. that's just kind of how I feel about his position in the ranks. And I actually wonder if Patrick feels the same way.
Yeah, I was really angry when you took Panik. And this is the second podcast that we've recorded where you're on one of my guys. Again, Panik is like my dude. I own him in so many leagues. I think I totally agree with your analysis. For me, I value Panik as a plug, somebody that is not going to hurt you in any real category. And say if you did draft like Keston Herrera, like, and you need to plug second base until he's up, Panik is the perfect guy for that. I love players like him in dynasty leagues. I think that they get super underrated when they are a consistent and safe asset for your team.
Yeah, we seem to tend to be on the same guys a lot.
Except for Ian Happ.
Are we not doing phrasing anymore? All right, that's fair. There's those plug and play guys are always have value in leagues, especially when you're looking to round out your roster. So that makes total sense. Patrick, in addition to your thoughts on Joe Panik, I think you also had some thoughts on Raul Mondesi at number 28. Is that accurate?
It is accurate. He is a player that I know has been talked a lot about lately, and just it's got to be his shot at playing time this year, and they can't continue to play Alcides Escobar. I just have to believe that they're going to give him a shot to play. He's got that upside in youth and speed, so Ian, you'll probably love him because you love stolen bases, so go get yourself some Raul Mondesi. That's it. You know, I'm not saying like he's a top-tier option or anything, but I think he offers significantly more upside than most of the players in this area.
That makes sense, and I will go get him because I do love speed because it's one of our scoring categories. All right, that is some great analysis for some later-round guys. Let's move on to our third base rankings, the top tier guys there, numbers 1 through 10. All right, Patrick, I think you have some thoughts on Joey Gallo at number 10. I believe you think he's too low, right?
I do think he's a bit too low. You know, I think last year was what we're going to see more of from Gallo. And I know that that approach is not one that many people are fans of. You know, the sort of three true outcome is very popular in baseball, and people can be dismissive of players with that skill set. But I just love, man, have you seen a Joey Gallo home run? Those things are freaking awesome and fun to watch. And I would, you know, I know it's not a huge difference. I don't think I'd bump him over Vlad Jr., although I'd consider it. I think that I put him above Senzel, and I think him and Miguel Sano are closer than people think. You know, they are both 24, similar hitting styles. I think you could go either way with either of them. Maybe you can have them both tied for seventh on this list, or tied for eighth. But you know, don't discount those three outcome players too much. And while Senzel has got a lot of tools and a lot of hype, I don't know where he's going to play right now. So proximity is a thing. I know that a lot of people are high on Senzel. I like the skill set, but I think Joey Gallo is a better play.
I can see for this year, maybe, having Gallo ahead of Senzel and Vlad Jr. I'm definitely still taking Sano ahead of Gallo. Long-term value, though, I still think I'm feeling Vlad Jr. and Senzel. I know the lovely buzzword with Senzel is that wonderful high floor. But in fantasy, that's important when you're looking for guys that are going to be consistent, which Gallo is consistent with his bombs and low average and lots of strikeouts. But, I mean, you were talking about you don't know where Senzel is going to play. Do you know where Gallo is going to play? Is he in there at first base, or is he going to be bouncing around third and outfield and whatnot again?
Yeah, I think that he'll. I think he's primarily actually going to be a first baseman. So yeah, actually looking more at that, where do we think his long term playing spot is? Do we think that first base is his long term spot? Do either of you have strong opinions on that? I can't say that I do. I know that he's playing full-time first base this year, I think.
Yeah, I don't. I don't have super strong feelings about it. But I still think long-term fantasy value, the total package of Vlad Jr. and the high floor of Senzel and his what he'll bring to the table as consistency, I think that's more appealing to me than Gallo. And I think that we actually have Gallo properly ranked at 10.
Yeah, fair enough. For what it's worth, I think Gallo probably ends up as a first baseman, but I don't have super strong opinions on that.
Just one more thing on Gallo. They've got Guzman down. You know, we touched on him last podcast. And, you know, if I know that Keaton was a sort of a bigger fan than I was with reason, he does have more power than I thought he did in the minors. But do we see Guzman taking over first base and then Gallo being their third baseman then?
If Adrian Beltre ever does actually retire.
All right. Good Gallo talk there. Keaton, I know you had some thoughts on Chaboy Rafael Devers. I know not a huge jump, but you wanted him ranked in front of Josh Donaldson. Devers at number 6, Donaldson at number 5. You'd swap those guys. You know, I assume by osmosis, everyone knows how much you love Rafael Devers at this point, but you want to talk a little bit about why you'd swap those guys?
Yes. I love everything about Devers, and plugging Triple Play again for for the Boston Red Sox. Patrick wrote some lovely words on Devers. You should go read them and why he's great and why you should also love him. Devers is very young and very talented and in the majors now. Donaldson is 32 and has been plagued by some recent injuries. So that should give you some pause in drafting an older injury-riddled player. Now, when he is on the field, he is very much producing. However, Devers has incredible upside and just hits the crap out of the ball, and I'm all giddy about him. So I would definitely take him and did take Devers over Donaldson in TDGX2 and actually traded up to get Devers. So when they say, get your boy, which, ironically, traded up one spot to get Devers, which is where I'd move him up this rankings, one spot. So it all connects. So I know that Patrick would also like to move Devers up, so I'll toss it over to him so he can talk about him as well.
Yeah, look at that serendipity there, moving up one spot. Patrick, would you move him up higher than Donaldson at number 5? You going to be bold and put him over Rendon or even Machado? I don't think so, but prove me wrong.
So that write-up, which you should absolutely go read, I don't want to spoil it for you, but it is a little bit of a love letter. I love Devers as much as Keaton, but actually maybe a little less so, because I worry about Devers long-term at third base. I have a bad feeling that they're going to move him to third or to first base next year because of his defense. I think it's something to keep a close eye on this year, because that profile still valuable, less so at first base.
Oh, a little plot twist there.
Man, that's some mighty cold water you just poured on the best player in baseball.
I do want to clarify something, because a lot of people some feedback we got from that article was that people seem to think that I am really down on Devers, and I want to make it clear, I am not. I think he has all the potential in the world. He dominated and crushed the minor leagues and ascended rapidly. He had huge home run fly ball ratios in the minor leagues. So, and he sprays the ball around the field. So despite the fact that he is a lefty in Fenway, I do think that he can be a successful power hitter there. I'm just a cynic and just in my heart, I can't say that he is going to be the next David Ortiz in, you know, as far as a power hitter in Fenway, that's going to be successful. And I just sort of, you know, I'm all about caution and avoiding risk in fantasy. And Devers does have a little bit of, I mean, risk at the position as far as like long-term stability, in my opinion.
That makes sense. I could see that. That's a fair point. And a great clarification for your position in the triple play, which was a fantastic read. And I would highly suggest everyone check out all of the triple plays as they come out. So, moving on from the top 10 at the position to, let's go to 11 through 20. Keaton, you have thoughts on Travis Shaw at number 16, is that right?
Yeah, so Travis Shaw is a guy that I am enamored with, and I think that you should be too. I mean, he finally got a chance to play when the Red Sox traded him to Milwaukee, and he set the world on fire. And just like we all knew that he could if he just got a chance to play. He, in his first full season with the Red Sox in 2016, he had a tremendous first half of the season. He went berserk. Then he got tired and had a very, very cold second half. Then they traded him to the Brewers in what may go down in recent memory as the worst trade in Red Sox history. I know Ben Carsley's still sore, but, you know, it happens. We're all with you. And then he just completely exploded, like we all hoped that he wouldn't as Red Sox fans. And 273 average, 349 OBP, even in his years with the Red Sox, his first cup of coffee, 327 OBP, pretty consistently high 300s, low 400s OBP in the minors. So he's getting on base. Double-digit walk rates throughout the minors last year, 9.9. Right in line with that, he gets on base. He strikes out at about 20%, low 20s, 20 to 22, which is pretty consistent with a lot of people in the majors. So that's not really going to hurt you anywhere. And he's got power on power. 31 homers, 101 RBIs, 84 runs, and to top it off, got to double-digit steals. Ian, I know you'll like that.
I sure do like that, Patrick. Convince us why Travis Shaw is improperly ranked at number 16.
Well, maybe as a Red Sox fan, I am secretly a little bummed about him not being on the team. But no, maybe it's a subconscious thing that I'm not aware of. But honestly, I think Miller Park is what has made Shaw successful. You know, that is a good park for left-handed hitters, which Travis Shaw happens to be, whereas Fenway is very bad for left-handed power hitters. So, you know, I think that he is a product of his environment. I just can't believe. I refuse to believe. That being said, you know, I do think that he is going to continue to hit bombs in Miller and provide decent value. I'm just not.
Yeah, I was going to say, good news, Patrick. He's hitting in Miller Park next year.
Yes. I just am not enamored with him the same way that you are, Keaton. And I could be wrong, frankly, that I do not see that 270 average sticking. And I do not see him maintaining a 350 OBP. So power is going to stick. Close to 30 home runs, but you can expect that average to probably be down in the 240s range, if not lower. And we'll see. You know, come the middle of the season, come later this year, I might be on the Travis bandwagon with you.
If he lets you on the Travis Shaw bandwagon. And Patrick, your Travis Shaw is Eugenio Suarez. You think he's improperly ranked at number 17. Give me a little more on that.
All right, so this is where I'm at with Eugenio Suarez. And this actually, I started researching him because Brady Childs had, we had a discussion in the TGG Slack chat room just about Nick Senzel, because Brady loves Nick Senzel. And I just didn't realize that Eugenio Suarez is good and could be a potential roadblock for Senzel if Senzel's possession or position in the majors is going to be third base. He puts up good numbers, has an above average launch angle. His home runs are above average, actually below average in distance, but he's playing in Cincinnati, so I think you can forgive him for that. But you're talking about a guy that's going to bat probably around 260 and hit 30 bombs at third base. I don't think he's getting enough credit. I think he's sort of under the radar and acquirable. I do not have the same love that Keaton does for Shaw with Suarez, but I do think that he is underrated and somebody that you should keep an eye on.
He's played second in the past, correct?
I think so.
Who do they have playing second base right now? Because Peraza has moved to the outfield, right?
Let's see.
And they traded Phillips.
Red second baseman. This is great radio content. Depth chart for the Cincinnati Reds. We've got, is it Jeanette?
Oh, Scooter Jeanette.
I think it's Scooter.
Yeah, Jeanette's playing second base right now, and
I forgot about him.
I don't think that he is. I don't think Jeanette. I'm not buying into his breakout last year. I don't know if you guys are. And I don't really believe in Peraza either. I do think that having Suarez listed as backup shortstop to Peraza is interesting, because that could mean that they put Senzel at third and Suarez ends up as a shortstop. And I like his profile there, too. So a good point, Keaton.
Yeah, seems like that Cincinnati infield is a little fluid at the moment, so it could be something to keep an eye on.
Cincinnati,
good call, guys.
Cincinnati is better than people think. I mean, that rotation is straight up hot garbage. That rotation is comparable to my TDGX rotation. It's bad.
Yes, that is bad.
All I'm saying is, offensively, I do think that there is something there. Maybe that's, you know, granted, you could pretty much play anybody in Cincinnati, maybe, but I just look at, like, I think guys like Schebler are underrated. I think Winker's going to play. Votto is a robot. Suarez. There are some sneaky value plays. That's really what I'm trying to say. Maybe the Reds are still garbage, but I think there's some sneaky dynasty and fantasy value on that team.
Last year, Cincinnati had the second overall pick in the draft, and this year they're going to have the fifth. So they have improved three whole spots.
All right. Moving on to the back end of the top 50 third baseman. Keaton, you've got some thoughts about Michael Chavis at 27?
Yeah, so I think that Chavis, we can slot him in there like 20, 21, move him up like seven spots. I think that's a good spot for him to be in this list. He has incredible power. He's shown that from day one when he, before he got drafted, and he's kept it going since he got drafted. That's really been his calling card in pro ball. And really his big miss was striking out. You know, when you have incredible bat speed, which is his plus bat speed plus raw power, when you have those tools, when you're in the lower levels of the minors, you can tend to just swing away and just let the contact kind of carry you. As he started to move up, he realized, okay, I need to kind of refine my approach because that's just not going to work, which he did. And then that showed to tremendous results last year, hitting .282, .347 OBP, knocked in 94 runs, which was the most in the Red Sox entire minor league system, and he tied for the most home runs in the Red Sox minor league system with 31. And so that was actually enough for him to be named by MLB.com the Red Sox minor league hitter of the year. So he's really started to work on the things that you would expect top prospects to work on to become better while they're in the minors, as well as having the plus tools that can carry you in your fantasy league and carry in the lineup, and especially hitting in Fenway Park. So although he's only at AA and is a bit away from the majors, when he gets there, he's going to light up the scoreboard. And for me, I think he's probably a solid a top 20 fantasy third baseman in dynasty formats at this point.
Nice little gem on the back end there. Patrick, do you have anyone on the back end that you are similarly enamored of?
Yeah, I am enamored with a young third baseman for the Cleveland Indians, Nolan Jones, who I almost did not draft in TDGX. I almost drafted Nate Jones. But yeah, so Nolan Jones is played in two levels last year, rookie ball and low A. He has tremendous potential for power at third base. He moved up and had more at bats at low A last year than he did in rookie ball. Actually about double. He had 135 plate appearances in rookie ball and 265 in low A. The K's are about 16% at that point, and he lowered his the walks are about 16.2%. So not about, they are. They're 16.2% in low A, and he lowered his K rate by a ton. In rookie ball, he was striking out 36% of the time, and then he made the adjustment and dropped his K rate down to 22%. I like him a lot, and I would certainly move him up on this list if I had the sway to do that. Certainly like him more than a guy like Todd Frazier. I would trade Todd Frazier straight up for Jones in a league. So just philosophically, because I know some people are going to maybe take this as like a hot take, my love for Jones. Just philosophically, I think that players that are this young and performing well at those levels will come with tremendous risk because playing Major League Baseball is hard and prospects often flame out. I think getting on these guys early, though, is important for success because you want to buy a stock that people aren't on and watch it appreciate in value, and then you can decide if you want to move him or not. So in general, guys like Jones are the Oakland's prospect third baseman. I think the last name is Newest. Sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Like those kind of guys on this list are guys I would rather invest in than guys like Todd Frazier or other players in the area. Keaton, do you feel similar with your love for Chavez? I mean, Chavez?
Yeah, I do agree. And that's actually why I would put Chavez up right at 20 with Adrian Beltre. Beltre, I believe, is actually going to be 40 years old coming into the next season. And while he's still somehow hitting like 300 and hitting 25 bombs, you can't really count on that for much longer, if beyond one season. So if you can invest in someone who's younger, and I mean, isn't that the whole point of, you know, what we're doing when you're talking about trying to get on guys early? That's the whole point of this industry. And, you know, what we're doing is trying to spot these guys and help people out with that. So, I completely agree with that. I'm totally, totally buying into that.
It's a strategy that has served me well in my home league for a few years now. So I'm certainly down with that. So that was some great analysis through our second and third base. Stay tuned for later episodes when we get a shortstop, outfield, and starting pitcher, reliever, all those. But the hour is late, and so we can't press on any further tonight. But before we finish off tonight, I feel like we should check in with our progress in our fantasy league, the Dynasty Guru Experts League Part 2, powered by Fantrax. Keaton, can you give us a brief refresher on the scoring over there?
Yeah, the TDGX2 is a 20-team 5x5 with OBP instead of average and saves plus holds instead of standalone saves. We had such a large crop of new writers come in, so we figured, hey, let's do a new expert league for people to follow. So we did, and the draft ended yesterday.
Yeah, we thought creating a draft with all the new writers would be good to sort of be an avatar for player evaluation and content as you guys out there in listener land press on with your dynasty leagues. Now, later on, we're going to be posting recaps of our draft, specifically talking about our favorite picks, our most favorite picks, our least favorite picks, and the picks that we like. The picks that someone else made that we like the most. That's in the works right now. So we're not going to delve too deeply into the draft that recently completed, but I do want to take a step down that road and see of all the picks that we've made, which ones were the most on brand for us, which ones sort of sum us up as fantasy players. For me, it was my 2, 3, 4 Rays prospects that I drafted: Christian Arroyo, Wander Franco, Pat Leonard, and Ronaldo Hernandez. I can't remember where I saw this, but there was some article, I think on Sports Pickle or something, about the 8 guys in your fantasy draft, and it had all the tropes of all the different guys you would see there. And one of them was basically the homer who picks a ton of his hometown guys and needs his team to have the best offense in the history of sport for it to be productive. That's essentially me with Rays prospects. I'm fairly reasonable when it comes to pro level, aside from SP3s, Shout outs to Jake Odorizzi. But when it comes to prospects, I think every one of them is going to be the next next superstar. So I was very happy to be able to get out of the draft with four Rays on my team. And relatedly, you guys can stay tuned for my spinoff podcast, Barely Informed and Ardently Held Beliefs About Baseball in Tampa. Will be airing bi-weekly. Keaton, what would you say was your most on-brand pick in this TGGX2 draft?
So Garrett Richards being the most on-brand pick, I don't know why. I have an affinity for broken pitchers that have a lot of risk, and Garrett Richards is really kind of the poster boy for that. A general trend that I end up following typically in most of my fantasy leagues, and I'm kind of glad that we're doing this. This is kind of fun. I know the guys on Tino talked about this, and it was really kind of neat to hear theirs, and it's kind of fun to just rehash your gimmicks as well. But I tend to go relief pitcher heavy because I end up drafting pitchers with a lot of risk to try and balance out the inconsistencies. So I tried to avoid it as much as I could this time with trying, like, getting three guys I knew were going to be reliable in Madison Bumgarner, Yu Darvish, Marcus Stroman, and then I loaded up on relief pitchers like I usually do with Wade Davis, Doolittle, Herrera, and Melanson. And then I added Richards, J.Lito, Skaggs. So I only ended up with four guys that have had Tommy John surgery, which I know that number is getting higher and higher. But still ended up with Richards and Skaggs. Was able to avoid. So normally I end up with like Richards, Skaggs, Gausman, Bundy, which is quite a volatile starting pitching rotation there. So I tried to purposely stunt my gimmick there and get out ahead of myself and draft people I knew were going to be reliable before I fell into my own hole, which I think I was able to successfully do here.
Excellent self-awareness. That's good stuff. Patrick, what about you? Who is your what's your most on-brand pick for you here?
So, yeah, the most on-brand pick for me is obviously Matt Olson. I took him in the third round. I am in love with the man, completely enamored. I moved Carlos Martinez for him in a league and got a whole lot of flack for that. I don't need to go into that trade, but I can defend it if you're interested. Hit me up on the Twitter and I'll expand on that. But otherwise, love Olson. I, unlike Keaton, let myself fall right into that hole and took him aggressively. I like guys that know their strike zone. I believe in all of his numbers. I'm worried about lefties, but he's got the potential. He's got potential superstar written all over him. I love that batting stance too. You guys see like his hands out over the plate. I love it. And the second player that I'll just name that was kind of mostly on brand is Schwarber. I took Schwarber what I consider pretty late. He's a post-type sleeper for me. I love post-type guys. I know that there's some concern about his defense and playing time, but he can hit the snot out of a baseball. And I think given playing time, he is going to be a superstar. I know that Theo Epstein, GM for the Cubs, has turned down trade offers for Schwarber because he likes him. If he's good enough for Theo, he's good enough for me too.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Based on what I know of either of you guys, those picks are all very on brand. So everyone out there, keep an eye out for the write-ups that will be forthcoming, laying out a little more analysis of the picks that were made as the draft unfolded. This has been the Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and I have been your host, Ian Hudson. You can find my hand at the Dynasty Guru in some of the articles that we have out there, some portion of them, especially anywhere From Whence has been replaced with Whence, and Chomping at the Bit has been replaced with Champing at the Bit. And you can find me on Twitter at USF Hudson, but I am not a very good follow. Keaton, where could our fans find you on the internets, should they wish to find you, and should you wish to be found, in the words of Paul F. Tompkins?
I love being found, and you can find me at the Dynasty Guru. I write awesome words, do some haikus in the ranking comments, do some awesome analysis in the Triple Play, which you should check out. It's been a blast to write, and we've got some awesome feedback on that. Definitely check that out. You can find me on Twitter, at The Spoken Keats. Pop into the Facebook group every now and then. Sometimes I walk down the street. I'm on airplanes a lot. I'm around.
Good for the Chicago-centric listeners. And walk right up to Keaton at the airport. Patrick, where can everyone find you on the internet, should they wish to find you and should you wish to be found?
So yeah, you can find me, of course, at the Dynasty Guru. You know, I know we've plugged the Triple Play too much during this podcast, but I cannot say enough about the analysis that Keaton did on our last piece. Of course, Adam and I kill it as well, but Keaton's breakdown of Giolito for the White Sox is a must read. So if you're listening to this, go read it. However, I'd appreciate if you followed me, because right now I have less followers than Keaton on Twitter, and it's bothering
fewer
me.
Followers.
You know, my ego is bruised. So I can be found at the Green Magnus, so on Twitter. And I would also, one last plug, go join the Facebook group, the Dynasty Guru Facebook group. You know, we're growing there. We're cultivating a community, and you know, our writers are in the group and answering questions. So get on joining our Facebook group, because if you want an edge, I think that's a great way to do it. And final thing, if you want to reach out to us for the pod, if you have questions, please email dynastyguru@gmail.com. If you have questions or comments on the podcast, we'd love to hear from you.
Well said, Patrick. Yeah, the next, as questions come in from our listeners, we will do our best to try and answer them every week. So it's an opportunity for you to come in and talk to us. And by all means, check out the Facebook group over there. Patrick has been doing a great job hyping that up over there, keeping everybody involved and interested. So I think that's going to do it at long last for us here at the Dynasty Guru. Everyone out there, have a good day, and as always, stay golden.